The gate. Finn hacked at dense blackberry brambles engulfing the gate. The sky, a low roof of gray, slow-drifting clouds, the hour growing late. He kept at it, cursing the thorny tentacles as they wrapped themselves around his arms and legs, fighting savagely to hold their ground. Every few minutes he'd have to stop and delicately peel off a vine with fat thorns like wicked medieval weapons clinging to the legs of his blue jeans or the long sleeves of his thick cotton work shirt. The pruner tucked in his pocket was sufficient for cutting away some of the vines, but frequently, especially as he got closer to the gate, he'd have to resort to the long-handled lopper or pruning saw. He had come out into the yard on this blustery late fall afternoon to burn a pile of leaves raked up the day before, and every once in a while when the flames in the fire pit began to die down, he'd stopped work on the gate to feed more leaves to the fire. He had no idea why he was suddenly so engaged in this project of clearing the gate. It had been there at the edge of his yard when he first bought the property a dozen years ago. Opening in from a thick tract of woods that extended a half mile or so out before climbing the long slope up Saddleback Mountain, the gate was attached to nothing. He guessed that it might have once been the entrance to a garden fenced off to keep out deer or rabbits or any of the various animals that regularly wandered out of the woods and onto his land. Over the years, he'd done little to maintain the yard beyond hiring a local to come in once a week, cut the grass, and fight back the encroachment of the woods on all sides of the property. Downstate, this was upstate in the Adirondacks, this property, he owned an apartment in Manhattan, where he spent most of his time, and a house out on the island, where his estranged wife lived with his son, who was still in high school. He hadn't seen either of them in more than a year, since they'd all gone to a Broadway musical together on the occasion of his 45th birthday. By the time he reached the gate itself, Finn was sweating, though the temperature was dropping as evening came on and daylight faded. He stopped a moment in front of the simple wooden structure and again considered quitting. Reddish, thick blackberry vines twisted around both gate posts and twined through the slats of the gate in an intricate weave. There was no point to this exercise beyond that he had started it and felt compelled to complete it. He'd spent the last languorous week here after breaking up with his girlfriend of the past several years. She was tired of waiting for him to divorce his wife, which he had long promised to do, though he knew it wasn't ever going to happen, both for financial reasons and because he'd grown comfortable in the life of a bachelor. Work consisted of fiddling with his investments. Beyond that, he was free to do whatever he wanted, which mostly consisted of pursuing an active social life in Manhattan. That, and travel with Kay, his girlfriend, who was an investment analyst with a Wall Street firm. Some 20 years younger than him, she was already jaded about her work and looking for an escape route, which Finn knew was a large part of her attraction to him. He liked to tell himself that she loved him for his youthful good looks and charm, but he knew it wasn't true. And his week upstate was teetering precariously close to something like depression. Starting to work a bit on the yard, raking leaves the day before and now burning them, and then crazily working hard on clearing the gate, was improving his mood, and so he dove into the job of cutting the blackberry vines away from the posts and slats of the gate. As he cut, peeled, pulled, and hacked at the thorny vines, Finn's troubled examination of the current state of his life evaporated and blew away with the breezes kicking up dust and rustling through the few burned-out papery leaves still clinging ruthlessly to the crowns of trees. A tall man, youthful and solidly built thanks to daily visits to the gym, he liked this image of himself out in the brisk fall weather, in jeans and a work shirt and thick workman's gloves, tools spread out around him on the ground, a fire crackling with burning leaves nearby while the sky grew dark. He fell into his work, released from thoughts of his girlfriend and his wife and son, Kay, Melanie, and Thomas, and the place in life where he currently found himself, which he had to admit was alone, without intimate relationships, now that things were over with Kay, and without real friends, there being not a single person who knew him intimately among his dozens of casual friends who he might talk with unguardedly and honestly. Even if he had such friends, he wasn't sure what he would say to them, or even what he wanted to say. These were the kinds of things that had been nagging at Finn all week, burrowing under his skin like rapacious worms. Everything had been given to him. Wealthy parents, an excellent education at exclusive schools, a great job in finance, retirement at 40. And yet somehow, here he was, still shy of 50, with nothing, estranged from his wife and son, at the end of his relationship with Kay, without friends, without anything to hold on to. Such were the thoughts he was released from as he cut away blackberry vines, till all that was left was one thick knot wrapped around the gravity lock. When he cut that away, the gate swung open, and he walked through. It was night and nearly full dark. The cold cut through him as a sudden gust of wind swept down the mountain with a sound that started as a moan and grew to a roar. He stared a moment into the black woods before gathering up his tools in the firelight and returning to the house. That night, he awoke to a man watching him. The fire he'd built after coming in from working in the yard had burned down to glowing embers. He was lying on the couch, cuddled under a velvety yellow throw, the fireplace directly alongside him, a pyramid of cordwood stacked neatly on a raised red brick hearth. He'd fallen asleep on the couch after an evening dulled by gin and tonics. He'd been attempting to read, or at least browse, a stack of untouched New Yorkers, and that had devolved into reading finance articles on his phone before he finally pulled up the quilt, settled his head on the cushion, and slipped off into sleep. Then, some hours later, he was awake again, still fully dressed but for shoes, and a man was seated in the recliner on the other side of the coffee table watching him. Finn got up, pushed the black fire gate aside, and fed a couple of logs to the fire. When he turned around again, the man was still watching from the recliner. He was big and strikingly ugly, with a face scarred by deep creases and crusted skin. Balding and obese, with rolls of fat along his neck, he filled up the recliner, his heavy hands lightly gripping the armrests. Finn said, "I'm still young enough, good-looking enough, and well off enough to attract girls in their 20s. I can start all over again if I choose." The fat man smiled, revealing a mouth full of mossy teeth. He said, "Help me up," and reached out a hand. Finn steeled himself against the fat man's touch, but did as requested. The outstretched hand was so soft it felt boneless. He had to grasp it with both hands and lean back hard before the man rose up out of the recliner with a grunt. The fat man looked around as if searching for something before he said, "I'm hungry." He waddled off into the kitchen, took a seat at the head of a marble table, and pointed at the stove. "Make me something to eat. My stomach's rumbling." Finn pulled eggs and bacon from the fridge and went about frying several strips of bacon and cracking three eggs into the bubbling fat. "Didn't I see some leftover prime in the fridge? Why don't you heat that up, too? Throw it in with the bacon and the eggs. Make a mess of it," he said. "Don't need to look pretty." Finn did as instructed. He carried the meal to the table, took a seat, and watched the fat man devour everything in a few minutes. When he was done, he pointed to the sink. Finn poured him a tall glass of water, which he drank down in a single gulp. "Ah," he said, satisfied. He pushed his chair back and looked across the table to Finn. "So," he asked, "are you sure you want a girl in her 20s? You're nearly 50 yourself." 20s, Finn confirmed. "That's the best age for having children. Plus, women age faster than men, especially after children. A guy like me," he said, "who keeps himself in good shape and's well off, I think it's best if his wife is 15 or 20 years younger." The fat man grinned. "Is that the problem with your current wife?" he asked. "Melanie? She gotten too old for you? She's the same age as you, right?" "That's part of the problem." Finn was annoyed at the fat man's tone, which was edged with sarcasm. It might not be, though," he added, defending himself, "if she had kept herself in better shape." Ah, the fat man said, and crossed his arms over his chest. So, a young girl then, in her 20s. Right, young and slim and beautiful. And that's about it for your requirements? Again, Finn took offense at the grin and the sarcastic tone coming from this fat, ugly character sitting back with his arms crossed over his chest like some kind of grand poobah. Yes, he said, that's about it. I mean, he added, we should get along, of course. The fat man threw open his arms in mock seriousness and said, but what about love? For a moment, Finn was angry, but that quickly dissolved into a deep sense of sorrow and loss that baffled him. He didn't know where it was coming from, but it hurt nonetheless. He looked away at the flames now raging in the fireplace. Never mind. The fat man reached across the table and laid a consoling hand on Finn's arm. But listen, he added, before taking his hand away. Are you sure about wanting more children? He sat upright then and shook the table to get Finn's attention. Let me be frank, he said, with Finn looking him in the eyes. You're not any good with children. You never have been. You hardly paid attention to your son. You left all of that to Melanie. It'll be different this time, Finn said. With a new wife, it'll be different. The fat man shook his head. I hardly know where to start. He seemed genuinely annoyed. You don't even want to be married. I do, Finn said. No, you don't, the fat man countered, raising his voice. You don't, and you know you don't. You'd lose too much money in the divorce. You don't want to be faithful to one woman. You want to move from girl to girl as long as you can manage it. We both know you cheated on Kay every chance you got, just as you cheated on Melanie before her. Not anymore, Finn said. I've come to realize that just now. Now I'm talking to you, and you're asking what I want. I think it was this week up here alone in the country, getting time to think. You asked, and this is what came out, and now I realize it's true. I want a wife and children, a boy and girl. I want to start again. I want more money, enough not to be hurt by the divorce. I want a lot more money. The fat man sighed and readjusted himself in the narrow kitchen chair, as if trying to get comfortable. The house was dark but for the flames from the fireplace, which cast a flickering red light through the living room and kitchen. Let me try once more, he said patiently. Listen to me, Finn. Sure, you want more money, I get that. But you don't want to be married again. You don't want more children. You're falling sucker to the story of a loving wife and adoring children that you've been told all your life. You don't want the actual thing, which in truth is difficult and more likely to be tragic than beautiful. Love dies. It always eventually dies. That's the truth. It's time. It's good for a time, and then it isn't. Children grow up and move on and forget you, but not usually before resenting anything you've done for them and draining you of money and energy. That's the harsh truth, and you, Finn, know it. And you are not the type to be faithful anyway. You won't do it. Finn said, I don't know what you're talking about. He pressed his hands down flat on the table and leaned toward the fat man. I want a new, young wife and two more children, a boy and a girl, and plenty of money. This time I'll do it right. I'll be the kind of father who loves his children and who they love in turn. I'll be there for them when they're young, and they'll be there for me when I'm old. The fat man shook his head, but the shift in his posture and the way he sighed made it clear he was acquiescing. All right, he said, but remember that I tried talking sense to you. I'm always the bad guy. Everything's my fault. But I try. I try to talk some plain good sense, and look what comes of it. Is it my fault no one listens? Again, Finn said, I don't know what you're talking about. Right, the fat man said, and reached his hand out to Finn, who helped him out of the chair. Over here, he said, and waddled through the flame-lit living room, down a hallway to Finn's bedroom, where a beautiful young girl was waiting in Finn's bed. Though she was covered to the shoulders in a silky white sheet, the way it draped her body revealed full breasts, a slim waist, and long legs. Her skin, upper chest and shoulders and face, was so bright and smooth and flawless she hardly looked real. She looked more like one of those anime cartoon girls Finn had occasionally come across online. Here you go, the fat man said. Just what you ordered. Her name is Barbara. He laughed and added, but she'll answer to Barbie if you like. Is she real? Finn asked. Of course she's real, the fat man answered. He put his hand on Finn's back and nudged him into the bedroom. "I'll be on my way now." "Wait," Finn said. "What's the price for this? What's your end of the deal?" At that, the fat man broke into unrestrained, rollicking laughter. The rolls of fat on his body jiggled and quaked as he clasped his hands over his belly and rocked back and forth until the laughter at last died away. "Damn," he managed to say. "What did you think, Finn? Do you think I was going to ask for your soul?" "I don't know what to think," Finn said. "But as I recall, there's supposed to be a price to pay for this kind of thing." "All right," the fat man said. He took a breath and composed himself. "Let it not be said that I'm anything less than totally honest. The price is Melanie and Thomas. The price is everyone else." "I don't know what the hell that means." "You'll figure it out or you won't," the fat man answered as he backed away into the flickering shadows. "It's all the same to me." Finn, suddenly frightened, called after him. "You're not going to kill Melanie and Thomas, are you?" "Oh, please," the fat man's voice receded as he disappeared into the shadows. "Don't be ridiculous." "Then what?" Finn shouted. "Tell me what you mean." He started off down the hallway toward the dancing shadows, but the fat man wasn't there to be found. There or anywhere else in the house. When he woke in the morning, Finn was out on his new deck in a rocking chair, a pillow under his head, his hands gripping the armrests. The yard spread out before him was bright and green with new sod. The old gate was gone, replaced with a tall privacy fence lined with swirling rows of meticulously kept, brightly colored flower gardens. Behind him, he heard Barb in the kitchen. From the clanking of dishes and the opening and closing of cupboard doors, he guessed she was making breakfast. Newly pregnant, her appetite was suddenly voracious. Finn found it cute, the way she dug into her meals as if starving. He considered getting up and joining her in the kitchen, but decided to wait and let her bring it out to him, as he knew she would. On the table next to his rocking chair, yesterday's newspaper was already yellowing in the bright morning sunlight. He grimaced at the headlines. More war in the Middle East and Asia. Drug deaths through the roof at home. Another mass shooting, this time over 50 among the dead. All this on the front page. He turned the newspaper over so that the financial news section was showing and glanced quickly at those headlines. His investments were making more money than he knew how to spend. Most of the work now fell to his accountants, whose principal job was to stash the money in places where he paid the least tax possible. A moment later, when Barb came out with the breakfast on a tray, he kissed her on the cheek and then stood and stretched while she poured his coffee. He leaned back into the sunlight spilling over him like a shower, closed his eyes, and soaked up another peaceful summer in the country.